You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome to You Can't Outrun the Fork. I am your host, Brett Bittner. You Can't Outrun the Fork examines healthy eating habits to break you out of the standard American diet and the problems that accompany it. We offer you a perspective on what it means to eat in a healthy manner from a variety of options and how we can fix our health by thinking about food differently. While I have an affinity for the ketogenic diet because it works for me, we will be examining a lot of other healthy eating options. Please be sure to rate and review us in iTunes, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and subscribe using your favorite podcast catcher. You can always catch the latest shows at can'toutrunthefork.com. We are often taking your questions, comments, show ideas, and suggested guests via email at show@can'toutrunthefork.com. If you are new to the program, we do keep things short compared to other things on the network, usually only lasting about 45 minutes. If this particular episode isn't your cup of tea, I suggest trying some of the others in the feed. This show is for adults interested in avoiding the health issues that plague the standard American diet. However, I am not a doctor, nor do I play one on this podcast. The conversations within are not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, they are a reflection of the experience of the host and guests, unless otherwise noted. Enjoy!
Kids are starving in Japan, so eat it. Just eat it.
Welcome back to another episode of You Can't Outrun the Fork. Today I am joined by the person who introduced me to the ketogenic way of eating, Anna Martin. She's also known as the Libertarian Homeschooler on Facebook and Instagram. I had the opportunity to meet Anna several years ago when I was on a panel with her son talking about education when I still lived in Atlanta, and we've maintained a friendship for quite a while, and she was one of the first people that I talked to about my diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. Ironically enough, in this exact same room where I'm sitting right now, I talked to her on the phone, and I have the opportunity to revisit with her today as we talk about some of the things that we have found when it comes to eating in a more healthy way and changing our bodies for the better. So, Anna, welcome. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks, Brett. I am really pleased to be talking with you about your great strides in the ketogenic diet. This is something that really means a lot to me. It's a big deal. It's a small deal now because we've both gotten smaller.
Oh, yes, much smaller. I think the last time that I saw you, we calculated up that we had lost between the two of us what I weighed at the time, which was 180 pounds. Between the two of us, we lost that. And whoa, it's a really big difference when I look back at some of the things that I saw way, way back of both me and for you.
You don't realize how you feel until you feel better. You don't realize how bad it was until it's over. And then you look back and you think, wow, that sucked.
Exactly right. And, you know, I never really realized how bad I felt until I felt as good as I do now. So as much fun as it would be to talk about that just for hours and hours, I do have a promise to the listeners of this show that we will try to keep the conversations to 45 minutes or less. That's one of the reasons that it's just usually myself and one other person so that we're able to get the entirety of a conversation together. And so I want to just kind of jump right into things. What was it that got you interested in changing the way that you eat? And what was it that said to you that said keto is the way to do it?
So I began in July of last year. So I've been at this for, 15 months now? And it was July 1st when I decided, July 1st was the day. I decided in late June. And one of the things that was really pushing me forward was that our oldest son, whom we called the young statesman, he was it looked like he was going to be leaving, and he was going to be going off to school far away. And I felt like we had done a pretty complete job of sort of helping him become the person that he wanted to be. But one of the things that we hadn't really been able to figure out was how to manage his weight. I had always followed a standard American diet, and not a really bad standard American diet. I'd always eaten high complex carbohydrates. I tried to eat as low fat as possible. And, you know, since I was a teenager. And so that was the advice that I gave my son. You eat high complex carbohydrates, low fat. You take care of not eating too much protein. And it's the butter that'll kill you, not the bread, not the sugar. And in fact, I remember talking to my doctor when I was a teenager, when they decided that I had high cholesterol, and that was a real problem. And the doctor said, you cannot eat fat. In fact, fat was not a word that we said in my household. It was actually spelled out, F-A-T, and it was kind of whispered. So I was giving my son the best counsel I could about diet, and it was the same counsel I had followed for a good, nearly 30-something years, and it just wasn't working. And I realized that that he was going to be leaving the house without this information, without really good information about his diet and how it was going to affect the way that his body worked, just his physical health, his mental health, the way that his skin looked, the way that he performed as an athlete, if he wanted to choose to do that. And I thought, he's really, really going to be limited. And this is where you're failing. You're failing to help your kid figure out how to actually feed his body so he's healthy. So I had to figure it out. The other thing that was really pushing me forward was the fact that I had an absolute laundry list of symptoms. I had chest pain. And at, you know, in my late 40s, I don't want to be having chest pain, but I had it. I had chest pain. I wasn't able to sleep at night. I was having trouble. I was having trouble with sleep apnea. I was having tremendous trouble with digestion. My stomach was a hot mess. I was constantly taking Tums. And when I wasn't taking Tums, I was taking, over-the-counter, what are those things called?
Something like Nexium or Prilosec for indigestion?
Yeah. Those are proton pump inhibitors. I just couldn't think of the name. So I was taking a lot of that, but my mind was getting foggy. And a friend of mine who was watching me go through all of this kept saying, you know, you're describing wheat belly. You know, you're describing wheat belly with this brain fog. And she'd been telling me this for a couple of years, but I wasn't in a place to listen. I wasn't really in desperation, but I was just really anxious to find an answer. And it was my friend, Danny Vega. He and his wife, Maura, over at Keto Evangelist Coaching, they were the ones who said, you got to try a ketogenic diet. And these are the only people in the world that I know who research more than I do. So I knew when they said, you have to try it, we're doing it, we've done all the research. I knew that the research was already done and the research was really good. So I went ahead and said, okay, I'm doing it. I'm going to ditch sugar. I'm going to ditch all the complex carbohydrates, no grains, no roots, no fruits, no sugar, no legumes. I'm not going to do any of it. So I just did that. And what really started it was my desire to give my older son the knowledge that he would need to function well, just as a human body. In the world, because he didn't have that, because I didn't have it to give to him. And so if I didn't have it to give to him, where was he going to get it from? I mean, his doctor was going to be telling him crazy stuff. So I had to do it. And thankfully, Danny and Maura had the answer. And I just did it just because I trusted them completely. And I knew that they would have done this tremendous research. So that's what did it.
That's actually kind of funny, because that's one of the reasons that I trusted that this would work for me. In the conversation that we had where I told you that about my diagnosis, was that I knew that you were somebody who was going to do the research, because you were doing it for your son. And I knew that you were going to put in the time to know the ins and outs and everything. And you were going to be somebody that could be a resource for me. through your research and through your experience, and you're only, what, three months further on this journey than I was,
yeah,
or that I am. And so,
yeah, that and Danny and Mauro.
In you was something for me that changed a lot, because, you know, I was told by my doctor, hey, you need to cut your calories down to this. You need to be focused on the typical advice that we give with regard to low fat, moderate carb, you know, just watch what you're doing, cut down on your sugar, probably stop drinking soda, probably stop drinking sweet tea. And we're going to manage this with medication, and we're going to manage it with two medications. And
right,
medications is going to suck so much the first time you take it that we have to put you on a graduated schedule to get you to the dose that you need to be on just to manage your blood sugar. And so for 3 weeks, I was in absolute agony as I was onboarding this med, because it was 6 days of nausea and what I describe as the intense desire to throw up, but with none of the payoff. And I would
have
that for 6 days. I would get back to one day where I felt semi-normal, and then I would have to up the dose to do another six days, and then one
day. Yeah, like garbage.
And that's exactly right. I felt like garbage. And so that was something that, I mean, at the very beginning, I asked my doctor, okay, well, how long do you think it's going to be that I'm going to have to be on these medications? How long am I going to have to take pills every single day? And he said, well, if you do a good job with your diet and your blood sugar continues to come down, then maybe in 2 years we can talk about dialing it back. And we can talk about changing things.
That's a long time.
It is a very long time. And, you know, I can say that 9 months after my diagnosis, I was completely off medication, and we were graduating.
Yeah, that was a great day.
That was a fantastic day. And that was a day that I celebrated by going and eating and drinking all of the terrible things in a rare and appropriate celebration. I had all the carbs. I drank some beer. I had some pizza. I had tater tots. Like, I had all of the things that I felt that I missed. And I plan to do that again on T2D Day, which is October the 27th. I'm actually getting a food crawl together where I've set it up so that my friends and I can go. And like I said, I can eat and drink all the terrible things. But it's a rare and appropriate celebration of the thing that changed my life, which was the diagnosis.
Right.
And so one thing that you mentioned that I don't know that everybody knows necessarily is, tell me a little bit more about wheat belly and what that is.
Right. Well, so I can't tell you a whole lot about it because I still haven't researched that.
Okay.
But there's a really successful doctor who is telling people, you know what, you eat wheat, and there's a reason that it's called a bread basket hanging there, you know, underneath your belly button. It's because it's caused by bread. And he encourages people to come off of wheat. I think it's Dr. Perlmutter. He's a friend of mine has read his book, and really actually two of them have, and really suggests highly that people have a look at this. I think that I'm talking completely I have no idea if this is true, but I think that wheat belly is very specific to wheat and grain, but I could be mistaken. So keto is different from.
But that was still something that for you was important enough to hear that you started looking at what would help you.
Yeah, that's a friend of mine was saying this brain fog that you're describing, and it was really intense brain fog, and it was debilitating, it was maddening. It was, it made me very sad. It made me feel unstable. I still have trouble with things like, you know, word recall. But that is all starting to come back with intermittent fasting, which is something else that I can talk about. But, that really deep brain fog is one of the symptoms that, you can have if you're not supposed to be eating wheat. And some people, I suppose, can eat wheat because they don't have this experience. But some of us, if we eat grains, our brains get really, really foggy. And that was my experience. Now, it could have, in fact, not just been grains, but been all of the carbohydrates that I was eating. Could have been. I don't know. What I know is that when I stopped eating carbohydrates, and I haven't completely stopped eating carbohydrates, but when I stopped eating carbohydrates at that high level, it was probably, 200 grams of carbohydrates a day, if you can imagine eating that much carb.
I couldn't imagine doing that now at all. I can't imagine eating 200 grams of carbohydrates in a day. I can barely imagine doing that in a week.
Right. Because it would make you feel really bad.
Right.
So I can sort of fluctuate between 20 and 40 grams of carbohydrate a day. And I lost 100 pounds, and I'm not at the weight loss point anymore. I don't want to do any more weight loss. I'm at the point where I want to sort of restructure my body. I want to do a recomposition overhaul. So the fat is pretty much gone. Except, I mean, I've lost 100 pounds, but I've still got this belly. And I'm 138 pounds, 140 pounds. I'm 5'6". That's a good weight by pretty much anyone's, metrics. But what I'm looking at, what I see is that there's still a belly there, and people say, oh, that's from a baby. No, that's not from a baby. That's nonsense. That's what that little bit of belly tells me is that type 2 diabetes is still sort of hanging out there in the wings, kind of waiting for me to up my carbohydrates. Sure. So I still need to work on recomposition. I still need to gain more lean muscles. And it may be that I still have fat to lose. In fact, I still have fat to lose, but I don't have weight to lose. I want it to be more muscle, less fat. And I think that's the ongoing project, right? It's going to take a little bit longer, and the results are it's not going to be as easy as just keto alone, because keto, all you have to do is you just have to refrain. But if you actually want to gain muscle, you've got to go out there, you've got to go after it, and that's not fun.
Right, you have to go from being an abstainer to being a moderator, where you're not necessarily staying away from the things that you were staying away from before, because now there's going to be value in that, in the recomposition aspect, by moderating your intake of some of those things that were no-nos before as you try to change the composition of your body.
Right, and some people are going to do it that way. That's absolutely correct. Some people are going to add back some carbohydrates, but that's not me. I will remain ketogenic, and I will keep my carbohydrates way, way low. The thing is that I'm a runner, and running in a state of ketosis, it takes a little while to adapt to that. So there are a number of ketogenic athletes out there, but there's not a lot of research on ketogenic athletes, because what they usually do is will do research for like 6 weeks. Well, it takes 6 weeks to kind of get adapted to using ketones, and so you don't really know what an athlete can do on a ketogenic diet until I would say a good 4, 5, 6 months into it. But most studies end at like 4, 6, 8 weeks, so you have no idea. Yeah, so we don't really have any idea what an athlete can do in ketosis. We can't say with any real, what's the word I'm looking for? See, brain fog. We can't really say it with any authority because we don't know.
Right.
But that's where I'm. So I'm not actually going to be putting back anything. In fact, if anything, the next step would be to actually slash vegetables. How you like me now, And so it would just be all meat. I want to see what that would look like. And that would take, just to really know, okay, so what is that doing to me? That would be at least 2 months of just strictly meat. And like meat, butter, cheese. Okay, so there are two different things. You can just do strictly meat, which is really, really hard. Or you can do, right, or you can do meat, butter, cheese, dairy. If it comes out of an animal, then you can eat it, you know, bacon fat, all sorts of stuff, as long as your food doesn't have fillers in it. But a lot of people think that vegetables are innocent and innocuous and quite wonderful for you no matter what. But people are starting to ask, well, wait a minute, is that true? Do plants really want you to eat them, or do they have toxins in them? Yes, they do, that keep you from eating them. Because when you eat the body of a plant, you're killing the plant. They have a vested interest in you eating their fruit. They want you to eat that. But, you know, plants produce toxins. Some people are not made to digest those toxins. And so the question is, are you one of the people who can actually eat plants or not? So that's a good question. The other good question that I'm looking at right now is, are you able to run long distances on ketones and nothing else? So you have to sort of figure.
No, go ahead.
So you have to figure that out. Another element of that is when you're doing long distances, you have to watch your electrolytes really carefully. And you know, the stuff that you usually drink to get your electrolytes into your body is just a complete sugar bomb. And I don't want that. I can't handle that much sugar. It's not going to happen. So I have to think about, okay, so how am I going to replenish my electrolytes without sugar and without artificial sweeteners? Because there's not a single artificial or natural non-sugar, non-glucose sweetener that I can eat that doesn't give me an absolutely pounding, crushing headache. I think another thing that they're finding is that artificial sweeteners will actually also spike your insulin, which
I found that actually sucralose, Splenda, spikes my blood sugar more than just regular sugar does. In fact, it's
right.
There are two. It's sucralose and it's NutraSweet, whatever that one, whatever the brand. I think it is that one, saccharin.
I don't know what NutraSweet is.
But both of those actually spike my blood sugar more than if I were to just eat or drink sugar. And so
right.
That's a really weird thing to me, because that's kind of the thing that people are pushed into when they are diabetic and they are looking at ways to reduce their blood sugar, is let's take a look at some of these artificial sweeteners so you can still eat sweets but not feel deprived. And that's actually something I want to get to in a minute, but I took a whole bunch of notes about things that I want to talk about with you. And the first thing that I want to discuss is something that happens very naturally for people that are eating in a ketogenic way, and that is intermittent fasting. And so
yeah, you just all hungry anymore.
Right. So for me, it was probably about 6 weeks or so in. I was fat adapted, and like you know, kind of along the timeline that you noted earlier, about 6 weeks in, and I just noticed a sudden drop in appetite. And this is even after the drop in appetite that I saw when I started taking the meds that made me feel terrible. But it got
right to
the point where I was having to figure out how I was going to eat in order to take my medication, because I had to take medication with food. And so I was trying to figure out, okay, what's the closest and furthest points that I can get from a meal and still be okay with my meds? So I found that if I was able to eat 8 hours apart, that my meds really didn't make me feel that terrible. And so I just kind of naturally fell into the 16-8 intermittent fasting, which is 16 hours of fasting and 8 hours of feasting. Even though I wasn't feasting, I was eating basically lunch and dinner and then nothing as I slept and no breakfast. And then I would have to force myself to eat lunch the next day just so that I would be able to take my meds. And I was living by a clock because it was driven for me by my medication. But I naturally fell into intermittent fasting. And now, I believe I talked about this with Paul on the very first episode, the Why Keto episode, that I can really go on one meal a day and not really feel it. I don't necessarily feel hungry. In fact, my girlfriend, who was on an episode, the previous episode, says, okay, what does it mean when you say you're hungry? I say, well, if I say that I'm actually hungry, then it means I really need to eat something like right then, because it's so rare that I'm hungry. And she said, okay. So can you just tell me your version of hungry, i.e. when you need to eat something just because it's that time, or you have to take, you know, medication or supplements or whatever it is that you're doing, so that I know, and just say that that's hungry for you. I said, okay, I can make that happen. And so she still says your version of hungry, but that's exactly what we mean, is, okay, it's time for that I have to do something that I need food for. So we'll go with that. So tell me about intermittent fasting, because I found it naturally just because of the way that I was needing to take medicine. And that was basically how I adapted how I was eating. If I didn't have to take those meds, I probably would have gone right into something where it was, you know, once a day, one meal a day, and been done with it.
Right. Most people find that that is exactly what happens. And I think it's completely normal. I belong to a lot of ketogenic forums, and this is just what people say, is I stopped being hungry. And so when I noticed this, it was about 3 weeks in, and I thought, I'm not hungry. I had not normally been hungry before a keto diet. I had been hangry, which is different from hungry. Hangry is when all of a sudden you think to yourself, I need to eat now or I'm going to commit a crime. You know that feeling that okay, my blood sugar just bottomed out and now someone has to die. So when I stopped feeling that feeling at about week number three, that someone's going to have to die feeling, that was weird, because I had been feeling that way since early childhood.
Okay.
And so at about week three, when I wasn't hangry, that was weird, for one thing. And so I asked people, what should I do? I'm eating by the clock, but I'm not eating because I'm hungry. And they said, if you're not hungry, don't eat. And I thought, this could be a really long time. So what happens is, when you become fat adapted, your body doesn't care if it's getting its fat through what you're putting into your mouth, or if it's got to go to your fat stores and mine from there. And so it'll do that. So when you're fasting, you're still eating. Your body's still getting what it needs. It's still getting the protein that it needs, and it's still getting the fat that it needs, but it's just getting it from what would have otherwise been loose skin or fat that you don't really need, excess fat. So
what are some of the different, we talked a little, or I mentioned the 16-8 intermittent fasting. What are some of the other ways that people are fasting intermittently that people should kind of know about? I know there are hours fasting, days fasting. What are some of the things from a fasting perspective that you have seen and tried, and different intervals and things like that, that you would say, yes, this is exactly what we're talking about as intermittent fasting?
Okay, so eat one meal a day, OMAD. So when you see that on a keto or a fasting resource, whatever it is, OMAD is one meal a day. Some people do that. They will have, maybe they won't eat until 5 o'clock in the evening. They'll take a meal, but that's not necessarily a ketogenic meal. Some people just do fasting. In other words, they will only eat dinner every single day, and they'll eat as they wish. not ketogenically, but some people do a ketogenic diet combined with one meal a day. Some people do, like you said, 16-hour fast, 8-hour feasting window. Some people will do one day fast. They'll just won't eat for 24 hours. And I had gotten to a 62-plus hour fast, which was from Sunday night until Wednesday late breakfast. So that's what I know about. Fasting really isn't, I mean, it's just not rocket science. Fasting requires one thing, and that is abstaining from food. That's it. You abstain from food. So what I would have when I was fasting is water or tea or coffee, all of it black, nothing else. But some people have what is called a fat sparing fast. And what they're doing is they're fasting, but they're fasting from everything except fat. And the reasoning behind that is that fat is going to not spike your insulin. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to keep their insulin really low for extended periods of time. And there are, you know, there are specific fasts that people use for particular reasons. I was fasting because I found that when I wasn't eating, my thinking was much more clear. And another interesting thing is that even though I eat a whole lot of food when I'm not fasting, when I'm fasting, I get cold. I get really cold. So fasting in the summer for me is excellent because if I'm having a fast and I can go out in the Atlanta sun, that's perfect. I can just lay out there like a little lizard and suck up the heat. But I'm finding that as the season changes, I'm cold, like I'm shivering because of my fasting. Now, people will say, oh, that means that you're not eating enough during the rest of the week. Well, nonsense. If you saw the plates of food that I am throwing down during the rest of the week, you would say, no, she's eating plenty during the rest of the week. But I get cold when I'm fasting. But when I break my fast, within an hour of breaking the fast, two things happen. One, I can feel a level of brain fog returning. And two, my temperature goes up immediately. Fasting for me during fall and maybe during winter, that might be a little bit harder. I might just need to suck it up and put on warm clothes and call it good. But I think just for a little while, because I was actually, you know, walking around cold and sneezing, and I thought, okay, that's not good. That's clearly your body trying to tell you something. If you're walking around cold and sneezing, everybody else is in shorts and t-shirts and barefooted, and you're wearing sweatpants, a sweatshirt, socks, and you've got your head covered, there's clearly something up. Right. So I'm going to try different things. I'm going to try fasting with fat. And I really do like the feeling, though, of just a total fast, just a strict water, coffee, tea fast. From Sunday night until Wednesday morning. I miss it. And it really does work well for me. So I'll just have to see. I might just have to dress more warmly and call it good.
So
it's also really good. Fasting is also really good for loose skin. By rights, I should have an awful lot of loose skin. I've lost a lot of weight. But when you don't eat for 62 hours at a shot, if your body still needs protein and it still needs fat. And so what it does is it's kind of cannibalizing itself. I think it's called, well, never mind. It's a lot. There's a lot behind fasting. But essentially what your body's going to do is it's going to hunt down protein that is not well used. So junky, broken protein, which means things like, you know, maybe tumors or cancers or the proteins that end up gumming up the works in your brain, those are the proteins that it's going to eat. Because it's looking at it and it's saying, well, this one's broken, we'll eat this. And it will eat the fat off of your belly instead. And it really doesn't care if it's getting fat from your plate or fat from your belly. It's all the same.
So in an effort to keep things in our normal time frame, I'm going to go with one more question for you that I think would be very, very useful for people who are listening. And I think that we're just going to have you back because there are so many more questions that I have in my notes that I want to talk to you more about. But something that you just said sparked the last question that I know that I wanted to talk about today with you. And you talked about your body cannibalizing itself. And for those listeners who follow us on Facebook, we actually shared an article to give a well-rounded view of healthy eating, where they slam the ketogenic diet because they say that basically your body's in starvation mode. And
I know, but that's
what they said. And you know, I want to make sure that we're talking and we're giving people information and letting them choose, you know, letting them decide. So when it comes to critics and those who are slamming the way that you and I and thousands, if not millions of people eat, how do you do it when they come at you and they say, well, you're starving yourself, or your brain has to have carbohydrates in order to function, or, you know, the myriad arguments against the idea of eating in a ketogenic way? What do you say to that? I know what I do. You know, I talk about, well, I can tell you that a year ago, I weighed 250 pounds. I weigh 175 pounds now. My heart rate, resting heart rate, is ideal for someone my age. My blood pressure went from pre-hypertensive to very, very, very right in the middle, I guess is the best way to describe, of normal. So I went from pushing heart attack to about normal. I had high cholesterol, I had high blood sugar, and all of those things are back in the normal or ideal ranges for me. So if I had to trade all of those great things for carbs or bread or sugar or whatever it is, I wouldn't do it. So how do you answer some of those people who say, well, the way that you're eating is just going to be terrible, you're going to have health problems forever and ever, this is not sustainable, all of the things that I know that we've all heard, and of course your favorite, don't you miss bread?
Yeah, no, I don't miss bread. So when someone comes at you with questions like that, what you have to remember is that you are talking with someone who's fighting an addiction. And my father, who is 76 years old, he's also on a ketogenic diet. He went on it because he was experiencing chest pain again. He was getting his papers in order, his will, his advance directive, everything else. And he had actually gotten kind of irritated with me because our son was on a ketogenic diet, and my dad had diligently gone to the National Institutes of Health and researched it, and he was furious that our 16-year-old, then 15-year-old, was on a ketogenic diet, and he was sure that we were going to do him irreparable damage. And so when your father, whom you trust and respect, is saying all of this about your son, whom you are bound to protect, that's pretty hard. And that's a pretty harsh criticism. In fact, we didn't talk for about 6 months because he thought that I was really doing him a lot of damage. Well, interestingly, he called me in January of this year, and he said, okay, I just want you to know that I'm getting my papers in order and la, la, la. And I said, okay, why? And he said, because I've been having chest pains and I've been having all of these symptoms. And I said, okay, you know what? We've done it the way that your doctor has told you to do it for the past 40 plus years. You're on death's door, so we're going to do it my way now. And I didn't give him a choice. And a daughter sort of has the right to do that to a parent and to say, we're doing it my way. And so he did it my way. And what he said probably 3 or 4 weeks in was, that was an addiction. And I said, yeah, that was an addiction. And he said, this is going to be the hardest thing to sell in this country because the vast majority of people in this country are addicted. And he said, it's as bad an addiction as an addiction to cigarettes. It's as bad as an addiction to alcohol. It's as bad as an addiction to drugs, but it's an addiction to glucose. And he said, this is going to be really, really hard to sell in this country because these people are addicted. The food is hyper palatable. it's socially unacceptable to eat in a different way. And he's right. Here's the thing. I'm done with that way of eating. I'm going to live. I'm going to survive. My family is going to survive. My children are going to survive. My father, who's in his mid-70s, says that he hasn't felt this good since he was in his 30s. These people who are addicted and who are saying, what they're saying when they're throwing all of these fake considerations at me, what I'm hearing them say is, I'm addicted and I can't see my way clear to giving up a bowl of pasta so I don't die. The only real response to someone who is saying, I prefer a bowl of pasta to living a good life, is compassion. And sometimes you're not going to be able to change their minds. And you're going to have to be okay with that. Sometimes you have to walk away. I remember when I said, I have something that I want you to think about, and if you want to ask me questions about it, you should ask, but I'm not going to try and make you go on this diet, because you can lose friends. You can, go without talking to your dad for 6 months. There's a lot at stake. So you have to approach it really carefully. You had the good fortune of having a shot over the bow. Your doctor said you've got type 2 diabetes and this could kill you. And so you were primed to listen, but a lot of people aren't primed to listen, and they don't want to listen because they don't want to give up their sugar. They don't want to give up their bread. They don't want to give up all of those foods that they use to celebrate. It just seems so weird. And in spite of the fact that, I've got before and after pictures that show you what I looked like then and what I look like now, they still don't want to believe it. And they don't want to believe it because they're addicted. And so, short of an intervention, which is what I did with my dad, and you don't have the right to do an intervention with most people in your life. There are some people that you do have a right to intervene, but most of them, no. You can give them more information, but in a lot of cases, they really don't want to know these things. They don't want to think about giving up these foods. And it's because they're addicted. So you just have to keep doing your own thing. You have to keep remaking yourself and being healthier and stronger all the time. And they're either going to come or they're not, but that's not up to you.
I think that's a great way for us to wrap things up. I want to thank you, Anna, for coming on and answering some of the questions and talking about some of the things that are really important to me. And it was really important to me to talk to you, especially on the show, to discuss some of the things, to discuss the changes that just a conversation that we had almost a year ago have made in my life. And I want to thank you for saying, hey, is this something that you would be interested in doing? Because this is something that has really worked well for me. This is something that has really worked well for my son. And your dad wasn't quite on board yet. But you were willing to say, hey, look, this is something that I think can benefit you. Here are some things. Ask me questions. Here are some resources. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to do with this is I have folks that I've talked to that have adopted this because they've seen pictures on Facebook. They've seen the difference of a year ago to now. They've seen pictures from when we did the ribbon cutting at the Marietta Performing Arts Center. And they see the picture when I was just there over Labor Day weekend, and they're like, wow, that is really drastically different. You look so different from 4 years ago.
Yeah, and what you're doing is you're throwing back starfish with every picture that you post. You're not going to get all of them, but it's going to matter to the ones that you do get back in the water. And once people do this, and once they do it, there's no halfway on this. There are people who will say, oh, I tried keto. And you're like, no, you didn't. You've got to do it for you have to do it for at least 2 months, and you have to be really, really disciplined.
Right.
Our biggest problem, I think, is going to be the people who say, I tried keto and it didn't work for me. There are going to be some people it doesn't work for. That's true. People who legitimately tried it, who gave up their carbohydrates completely, and it really didn't work for them. But there are going to be people who say that they quote unquote tried keto, but there is no try. There's do or do not.
Yes, that's definitely true. There is no halfway, half attempt. You really do have to embrace it. Where can people find out more about you? Where can they find out more about what you've been doing with the way that you eat, or generally what's happening with you or with your sons, or even some? I've even seen health updates about your dad. So where can people find out more information about you and connect with you if they'd like?
Right now I'm just on Instagram as the Libertarian Homeschooler. I post a lot of pictures of the food that I'm eating and other things that I'm doing. I keep a pretty regular Instagram presence. Our son recently left for school, so I've been a little bit quiet lately because I'm, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Right.
But I usually post pictures of all of the great food that we eat, you know, our lasagna, fried chicken, pizza, the desserts that we eat, and they do have, you know, those desserts have carbohydrates. But if you're not eating well on a ketogenic diet, you're doing it wrong. If you're on a ketogenic diet and you miss bread, you need some more recipes. You got to do some research because there are really great recipes out there for your favorite foods. And there's no reason not to eat well. If you're not eating well on a ketogenic diet, you're not doing it right.
All right. Once again, thank you very much, listeners of the show. Remember, if you do have any questions or comments or show ideas or even guest ideas, doesn't necessarily have to be somebody who's keto. As you've heard in the two previous episodes, we talked about unhealthy eating and eating disorders. Remember that you can always email us at show@cantoutrunthefork.com. Again, that's show@cantoutrunthefork.com. We are on Facebook at You Can't Outrun the Fork. We're also on Instagram and Twitter. Just do a quick search for You Can't Outrun the Fork and you'll find us on all of those. Make sure that if you are listening via iTunes that you rate and review us. That really does help other people get to hear the podcast, because as ratings and reviews continue to show up, it makes us more visible. And I want to thank the people at We Are Libertarians for the network for giving us a platform to be able to do this. And once again, I do want to thank Anna so much for joining me, and looking forward to talking with you guys when I come back from a cruise to the Caribbean. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.